greetings from the Commonwealth of Virginia. This is your Captain Joe, up in the captain's chair, and where you are on the magical isle of Vashon, it is one bell of the afternoon watch, and where I am, it is seven bells of the afternoon watch, and on the port bridge wing, because the starboard bridge wing is usually the captain's bridge wing, so on the port bridge wing, the bosun's mate of the watch is mustering, or is about to muster, the relieving watch for the afternoon or evening watch, the first dog watch, which starts at 4 o'clock, 1600. So greetings to everyone, to all of Captain Joe's people from the Commonwealth of Virginia, and to all of my people all over the world. And I'm broadcasting, as is always our custom, live, unrehearsed, and unscripted, this time from the Commonwealth of Virginia. And I am right now in a rest stop about halfway between Alexandria, where I was born, and Richmond, which was the capital of the Confederate States of America. All of this part of the world is very dear to me because I grew up for the relatively short period of my childhood. I grew up in this part of the country. And my grandfather was a country doctor in Fairfax County, which at that time was still very rural. And all of the names, the place names, are based on place names from England, because all of this part of the country was settled by English people. And my forebears go back to the 1600s in this part of the country on my mother's side. On my father's side, of course, relatively raw German immigrants came over in 1870, which was the beginning of the Franco-Prussian War, and they settled in Maryland. But those are other stories for other times. All of this part of the country is still very much Lee country. Arlington County, of course, was the half of the District of Columbia that Virginia was supposed to contribute, and the square sides of the district were laid out such that they were 10 miles on a side, with almost half of that being contributed by Virginia and the other half by Maryland. But the Civil War intervened, and so, of course, the Virginia part was never brought into the district and instead became Arlington County. And Arlington is the name of the home of Robert E. Lee. And all over Northern Virginia, there are Lee Highway, Leesburg. One of Captain Joe's people spent a considerable amount of time in Leesburg in a school in which he was a teacher. And all of these connections with the terrible war which broke our nation apart and which then had to be reassembled are very much a part of this part of the country. The next county down is Prince William County, and on and on all the way down. And as you drive down Interstate 95, which is our Interstate 5, it goes all the way from Maine down to, I believe it goes as far as Miami. Route 1, which was the original north-south arterial, does indeed go all the way from the tip of Maine all the way down to Key West. And it is still in existence, and you can still drive it. But I'm on Interstate 95 because it's convenient and it's fast, and I need to get to Norfolk by this evening. But as I drive down Interstate 95 and I drive through places like Fredericksburg and not very far from the Chancellorsville battlefield and all of the battlefields which were part of the of our terrible Civil War, all of them are in this part of the country, and all of them were part of the vocabulary of my growing up. And I'm led to wonder whether or not universities like Washington Lee University or the high school where My sisters went in Arlington, Washington Lee High School, whether Jefferson Davis Highway, which is still marked clearly as Jefferson Davis Highway, whether all of those things are going to be eventually changed. And it remains to see whether or not that is indeed what is going to happen. The Interstate 95 was built to parallel, and in some cases it is also coincidentally still called US 1. And it is also called the Vietnam Veterans Highway, parts of it are, and also called the Purple Heart Highway. So it knifes its way right through the heart of the Confederacy from the Potomac River all the way down to the capital of the Confederacy in Richmond. And very much am I picking up the thread of memories from my all-too-short childhood, and also of my family that still has people living in this part of the country. The binnacle list is an interesting one this time because it includes, of course, all of Captain Joe's people who are hurting in some way, and we have come to include if there are financial problems or mental or emotional problems, as well as the original purpose of the binnacle list, of course, was to tell the captain which of his sailors was not able to go to sail stations as a result of sickness or injury aboard ship, and the list was hung on the quadrantal spheres of the magnetic compass, and which was part of the binnacle, and that's why it's called the binnacle list. So all of Captain Joe's people who are on the binnacle list are very much in my heart and my mind, and I'm adding Your Majesty the Queen, who is also in my heart and my mind because I am a staunch advocate of the British monarchy, for them, not for us. And my brother-in-law, Jack, who is who's not doing very well right now. So those are the binnacle list entries for this time. And I have... and in particular, thinking about all of them because it was brought very closely to my attention just yesterday that someone in my own family, very close to me, and for whom I have the greatest affection and love and admiration and respect, is diving deep into the pit, which we now call Alzheimer's, and it's not going well. I had some adventures on this trip already, and it's only 2 days old. So when I got to SeaTac last night to get a flight through the night, and I like to fly through the night because I can sleep on airplanes and wake up the next morning when we're on final into whichever airport it is that we're headed for, and I can spring butt up and get right to the day's business. Unfortunately, Maryard did not have that same ability or capability, and she was never able to sleep on airplanes. And the few times when I booked overnight flights, because that was the best flight that I could get for that particular trip, she was a real pill the next day. And so I tried not to do it, but when I'm traveling by myself, then I tried to book nonstop flights to go through the night. And that's what I did on this particular case, except I was not able to book a nonstop. And so this particular flight, when we were pushing back, the pilot in command, the aircraft commander, the captain, said that there was going to be some delay. And part of that delay was because they had to de-ice the aircraft. I'm all in favor of de-icing when it has to be done. I am always reminded of the Air Florida flight that took off from Washington National, now called Reagan International, I think. But Washington National Airport took off from Washington National Airport, was not able to climb out, crashed into the Memorial Bridge, which goes across the Potomac River, and slid off the bridge and into the water. And the river was ice covered, and the people that did not drown died from exposure. I think there were some people rescued thanks to the heroism of some people some rescuers who went in the water after them. But there were some people that drowned and some people that were that died from exposure. So I'm all in favor of de-icing, even if it costs us a little bit of a delay. And we finally got underway. It was my first flight in a 737 MAX. And when we were making our approach into Newark, that was our destination. I was not able to book a nonstop. And so I had to stop and change in the much disliked Newark. And I'm going to give you a couple groups in a minute as to why it is such a disliked airport, and when to avoid should you be able to make that choice. So as we were coming into Newark, we were flying over places like the Raritan River and several other waterways that we have fouled so badly that even though they've been cleaned up to the point where you cannot see oil seam on the surface, and I'm reminded then of the Cuyahoga River near Cleveland, that you could burn the oil on the top of the water, on the top of the river. So some cleaning up has been done in these industrial areas, but they're still incredibly ugly and incredibly barren in terms of any green. It's all tank farms and other necessities of the industrial age. So as we were coming in, I have been schooled in particular by first my own aviation people on active duty, and in particular the aviation people that I carried as shipmates in my Northwind, and then after that by a friend who was an Air Force instructor pilot, and now of course by Captain O'Brien, who is an aviator of much skill. And the schooling that I got from them was that they always fly the checklist. And I know that the landing checklist on any airliner is to put the wheels down. So I'm sitting there having swallowed my concern about it being a MAX. And it's a pretty quiet airplane. And I'm listening for the sound and waiting for the feel of a thump as those wheels come down. I heard none, I felt none. And so as we were getting closer and closer to the runway, it was indeed just a little bit of stern tube puckering there. Certainly, he has remembered that vital part of the checklist, wheels down, or as my Brit friends say, undercart down. And in fact, he had, of course, done it. And in fact, he greased it right onto the runway. It was a lovely piece of airmanship. So it was not that I did not have faith that he was following the checklist. It was that I had not heard the noise that I am accustomed to hearing, and I had not felt the thump that I'm accustomed to feeling. And so there we were with wheels down and safely in Newark. My difference of opinion with Newark Airport is that it and its management has lost sight of the fact that an airport exists to service aircraft and the passengers that that ride in them. And instead, Newark Airport has become a mall for food stores, for restaurants, bars, places where you can buy all sorts of nicky-nacky that you need to get to your gate. So because I was going from one United domestic flight to another, I only had to walk 3 miles instead of the customary 8 that is has become customary these days with shifting when you have to change planes. So I was in the same concourse. There be a merciful God in his heaven. I was in the same concourse, at least. And I could see gate 87, my destination, and the place where I was to get my flight from Newark to Dulles. I could see it. But I could see it only over the heads of all of these people who were queued up to buy breakfast and who were on one side and who were trying to get into a Hudson News store on the other side. And these were people that were completely blocking the passageway. So I am saying that if I will not book through Newark any time ever again unless there is no alternative. It really is pretty bad. And the next thing that happened in Newark, though, was that I was sitting in the on the starboard side of this. This was another 37, but not a MAX. And it was a short flight. It's not even an hour from Newark to Dulles IAD. And I was sitting on the starboard side, and I could watch the gear being loaded into the aircraft. I know now why luggage gets lost. Because the way that they did it there was that one person, a gentleman who I would estimate to be close to Medicare age, drove up the conveyor belt equipment, and then a colleague drove up the tractor with pulling two carts that were full of luggage. Each bag was then minutely examined by the man who had driven the conveyor belt machine and was then dumped unceremoniously onto the conveyor belt where it moved into the belly of the aircraft, where it was stowed, no doubt, smartly and in a seaman-like fashion by an elf that lives down inside each one of those airplanes. And this process took a long, long time. So we heard the pre-flight briefing, the safety briefing, from this lovely young, very young flight attendant. And the bags were going in, and he was checking each one to make sure that it was going to the right place. He had some little scanner thing, and he was moving each one of these bags by hand. And he got to the one cart was empty, and he started working on the other. And there were some forlorn bags that got set off to the side for some reason. I recognized mine as being one of those. It was sitting on the ground, and the man whose name we shall call Kenneth, for that may not be his name. But anyway, Kenneth was loading the aircraft, and my bag and about four others were sitting off to the side. I know it was my bag because it was standing up tall and straight in a very captainly way. And I also know the color because it was one of the last things that Mary R. bought for us before she died, and it was in the hope that we would be able to do some traveling together again. So my bag is sitting there along with four or five others and a couple of parcels. And then Kenneth finally had to admit that mine was eligible to go to Dulles, and so it and the rest of the bags got put in the aircraft. By now we've had one safety briefing. And the next thing that happened was that all of the parcels, except for one forlorn little box, were also loaded into this aircraft. And Kenneth goes up, and it looks like he's about ready to dog down the hatch to secure everything. And the next thing that happens is that the door to the cabin opens up, and about 8 people come in, and their luggage magically appears out there on the tarmac. So Kenneth opens the aircraft up and it loads all that stuff in. And these new people, of course, had to get the safety briefing. This is safety briefing number 2. And that one box ended up still sitting there. And I'm becoming very concerned about that. Maybe that's got insulin in it or some other life-saving substance. And Kenneth is ignoring it. So I think I'm about ready to intervene here when Kenneth looks at the box and decides that it is not to go to Dulles, it's to go someplace else, and he takes it away. And so the aircraft commander is saying, all right, now we're going to push back. We're running a little bit late. There's some problems with the runway configuration. But we're about ready to get underway. And then the cabin door opens up again. And this time, an elderly couple of Asian appearance came into the cabin. And at the same time, their bag showed up outside the plane. Well, Kenneth, by this time, is completely gobsmacked. But in the meantime, because we had new people on the airplane, we now got safety briefing number 3. And their bag, labeled Nautica, is sitting out there. And Kenneth is not about to put that bag onto the airplane. Either it had there was no room for it, or I don't know what his reasoning was. But anyway, it was not going to go on the airplane. Airplane finally gets pushed back. By now, we're about half an hour late. Airplane finally gets pushed back. Nautica bag still out on the tarmac. So, lovely elderly Asian couple, I don't know where your bag went. It's probably still wandering around the passageways of Newark International Airport, now called Liberty International Airport. Still wandering around there. I hope you're reunited with your gear soon. But that's what happened this morning. And then we did finally get underway. We were number 8 to take off at Newark. And so we sat and sat and sat on the end of the runway. And this brings me to my next point. And I'm quickly running out of time. I wanted to talk briefly about Felicity Ace. So maybe I'll save my next point for next time. It has to do with another a piece of advice for traveling, especially for travelers who may be of a certain age. So I want to talk briefly about Felicity Ace. Felicity Ace is the car carrier that caught on fire about a week ago off of the Azores. And I've gotten some very interesting information about car carriers from one of Captain Joe's people on the Coast Guard Channel, the Gunner. I have to say that the title Gunner, Warrant Gunner, is almost as old as the title of the Warrant Bosun. Bosun goes back to the beginning of time, practically, and the term Gunner goes back to the time when we first started carrying weapons aboard ship, which has got to be 500, 600 years. So my Gunner is not that old, but he pointed out that ships like Felicity Ace are very tender, they are top-heavy, and I have speculated that it would not be at all surprising to me if the firefighting water that has been poured into her does not drain down quickly enough and she just rolls over. So we've had several of those car carriers roll over. Golden Ray is the one that I reported on several times because that one was such a tragedy. And these ships have very peculiar handling and stability characteristics. And it looks to me as if she is probably going to be a total loss. Her cargo is probably going to be a total loss. And she is full up with about, 2,000 vehicles. Some of them are electric, and those electric cars all have those enormous lithium-ion batteries in them. And we're going to talk a little bit more soon about lithium-ion batteries, and in particular, vessels, probably one of the worst that there is in the world. I'll have a lot more to say about all of those things, but I've been asked by a couple of Captain Joe's people who are faithful and weekly listeners from the captain's chair about Felicity Ace, and so there is some information about it, and there will be some more as well. So I am almost at the end of my time. We have talked a little bit about memories of my childhood. I did have one. It didn't last very long. But I tell those stories because maybe they will evoke in some of you memories that you either have suppressed or you think that you're too far away from not to want to bring them up again. This is turning out to be a precious time for me, and tomorrow I'm spending some time with some of my Ingham and Vietnam shipmates, so this is turning out to be a great trip, because also I'll be spending some time with my two sisters, who the three of us, have not been together for a number of years. So having now come to the end of my time, it is, as always, my custom to say that it is my wish and my hope, my desire and my command from the captain's chair that each of you who are responsible for other people will fulfill that responsibility in a smart and seamanlike fashion, that you watch their six, and that you do, if you're on the medical list yourself, that you do everything that you need to do, you're supposed to do, in order to take care of yourself, because if you don't take care of yourself, you cannot take care of other people. You cannot be semper paratus. So this is your Captain Joe from the captain's chair, this time from the Commonwealth of Virginia, deep into his own early past, and sending much aloha, respect, admiration to all of Captain Joe's people wherever you are in the world. I am up in the chair on station and watching properly. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And we will meet again right here on a week from today. And I will be back from my travels, and we'll have more interesting things to report. All hands, take care.